Are you a crafter? Annie's Kit Clubs will deliver creativity right to your mailbox. Get a new shipment every month with supplies and instructions to make something beautiful. Whether you like crocheting, quilting, knitting, or other crafts, Annie's has a club for you. They even offer clubs to try a variety of crafting techniques. Make a quick new project every month or take a larger piece like a quilt or an afghan one section at a time. Annie's has clubs for kids too. So introduce your kids to crafting, woodworking, and STEM activities with projects they can make themselves. No matter your age, skill level, or crafting interest, you can explore your favorite hobbies with convenient kits that are just the right size. Visit Annie's Kit Clubs, that's A-N-N-I-E-S, K-I-T, Clubs, C-L-U-B-S.com, and enter promo code BOOMER at checkout to receive 50% off your first order. Begin crafting today. Hello, and welcome to the Hey Boomer Show, the show where we believe that we are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. My name is Wendy Green, and I am your host for Hey Boomer. And today we're going to be talking about self-compassion. And it reminded me of something that I wrote about in a blog a couple of weeks ago on resilience. And in that blog, I quoted a Miranda Lambert song. And the song is about a breakup. And in the chorus of the song, she says, and I promise not to sing it to you. She says, "Go and fix your makeup, girl. It's just a breakup, girl. Run and hide your crazy and start acting like a lady, because I raised you better. Got to keep it together, even when you fall apart." Hide your crazy. Keep it together. Is that something that you would tell your best friend after the end of a relationship? Probably not. But is that something you might say to yourself, like, okay, enough already, get over it? You might. So most of the time, we are harder on ourselves than we are on other people. And it doesn't have to be that way. I'm looking forward to talking with Dr. Ellen Albertson about how to make self-compassion our superpower, because we can all use a little more self-compassion. Before I bring her on, I want to remind you about our sponsor, Rhodes Scholar. They are the nonprofit leader in educational travel for boomers and beyond, and for boomers with their grandchildren. They travel to all 50 states in the United States and to over 100 countries. And as most of you know, I will be traveling with Rhodes Scholar in just a few weeks to Costa Rica. Super excited about that. And I have to say, I mean, I've traveled with them a few times, but I'm always impressed with the amount of preparation that they give you for any trip that you take. Besides the regular, you know, these are the vaccines you need or you don't need, or this is how you should pack, they've also given us information about Costa Rican food, Costa Rican plumbing, Costa Rican showers, and tips for enjoying the outdoors. So I highly recommend that whenever you consider travel, that you look at what Rhodes Scholar has to offer. If you go to roadscholar.org/heyboomer, you will have access to all of their travels in the United States, outside of the United States, and they also do some online travel for those of you who don't want to get on an airplane just yet. So be sure to use the /heyboomer when you go to roadscholar.org. It's /heyboomer. And I wanted to remind you about the Boomer Banter that is tomorrow night from 6:30 to 7:30 Eastern Time. We meet once a month. And someone described the Boomer Banter as having dessert with friends. I love that. It's a fun hour with the Hey Boomer community where we share a glass of wine or whatever it is that you like to drink, maybe have some dessert or snacks, and we form a community and we bond and we learn and we laugh. And this topic, the topic for this month is lifelong learning. And I have something really fun planned. I think you're really going to enjoy it. This is a membership gathering, but I would like to offer you a taste test for your first meeting of the Hey Boomer Banter. Let me know if you'd like to join us. You can drop me an email at wendy@heyboomer.biz, and I will share the Zoom link with you. And then you can decide after this first meeting if you would like to join. I think you will. It's a lot of fun. So I hope to see you there. All right. Let me tell you about Dr. Ellen. I'm going to bring her on, as I tell you. Hi, Ellen.
Hey, Wendy. Good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. Thanks. Let me tell them about you. So Dr. Ellen Albertson is a psychologist, a registered dietitian, a board-certified health and wellness coach, a podcaster, a Reiki master, and a self-compassion teacher. She is known as the Midlife Whisperer, and she helps women get unstuck and find the energy, confidence, and clarity to make their next chapter their best chapter. Dr. Ellen is also a best-selling author, an inspirational speaker, and an expert on women's well-being. She's on the Medical Advisory Committee for the National Menopause Foundation, and she's an ambassador for Vividly. She has appeared on Extra, the Food Network, NBC World News, and has been quoted in Psychology Today, Forbes, Eating Well, and USA Today. You can see behind her, for those of you who are watching, her latest book is Rock Your Midlife, 7 Steps to Transform Yourself and Make Your Next Chapter Your Best Chapter. Wow.
Thanks, Wendy. That was a beautiful introduction. And I loved hearing your introduction and more about Hey Boomer and Rhodes Scholar. That sounds like such an amazing trip.
I know. I'm so excited about that. Thank you. So I know that you have been not feeling 100% lately. So I just wanted to catch up on your health challenges and how you're doing now.
Oh, sure. Well, thanks for that. You know, boomers, you know, there's always a new thing. And I was diagnosed with breast cancer last April on my son's 21st birthday. It was a huge shock to me. I have no family history, but as part of that whole getting better journey, I actually just had my ovaries and tubes out. So I've been recovering from that, getting ready to actually go to London and talk about how to rock your midlife. So feeling good though, feeling good, doing the repair thing.
Good. I know. And we never like fully grasp, but it takes us a little bit longer now to
absolutely
recover. But yeah, you look great.
Thank you.
So let's talk self-compassion. And I think I told you in the waiting room about a discussion I had about the difference, or what is the difference between self-compassion and self-care?
Yeah, well, you know, self-care is all the things to do to take care of your body, your mind, your heart, your spirit. Self-compassion is more of an attitude, a way of being, a way to connect with yourself. It's essentially is treating yourself the way you would a good friend. So they're both kind of things that you do, but I think about self-care as like the specific things that you do to take care of all aspects of the self, the body, the mind, the heart, the spirit. Self-compassion is more about how do I treat myself like a good friend? How do I talk to myself? What do I do when I'm stressed and I'm suffering? What do I do when I fail? So self-compassion is also a lot like a muscle. It is both a trait and a state. So some people are just naturally kinder to themselves than other people. But the good news is that anybody can learn to be more self-compassionate. Before I discovered self-compassion, I was like your typical type A personality. I had, you know, the triple threat. I had the workaholic, I had the perfectionist, and I had the self-critic keeping it all together and keeping me in place. So if I could learn to be self-compassionate, anybody can learn to be self-compassionate.
So, you know, we hear so much about self-care, like eat right and exercise and all that. Why is self-compassion so important?
Well, you know, self-compassion is, first of all, I like to think of it as sort of the motivator for the self-care. Doing these things, not because the doctor told you that, you know, your blood pressure is high or you got to lose 20 pounds or you don't like who you see and what you see in the mirror, but you're doing it because you love yourself. You love yourself enough to eat right, to move your body, to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night, to surround yourself with good friends, to travel, to do all of these fun things. So it's a really powerful motivator. And, you know, before I found self-compassion, I was a nutritionist and I was a personal fitness trainer at the time. And it was like, I was like an alcoholic in a liquor store. I was a personal fitness trainer. I was working out 4 to 6 hours a day with all of my clients, had negative body image, eating disorders. And I thought, well, when I have the perfect body, whatever that is, then I will love my body and I will, more important, love myself. But we never got there. My clients and I were always beating ourselves up. You know what? Lifting dumbbells, while it's great for strength training, it's great for your muscles, great for your bones, it doesn't help you to feel better about your body and yourself. And so I was looking for an intervention, a way to really help women feel good about themselves and their bodies. And that's how I stumbled on self-compassion. And what my research showed is that, yes, it helps with negative body image. So it reduces body shame, body dissatisfaction, self-worth based on appearance, improves body appreciation, but it also helps you to feel differently about yourself. It's very different than, you know, self-esteem. Self-esteem is, I think, in the 70s, we're all sort of chasing this, like, feel good about you. Yes, I am wonderful, all of this stuff. But the problem with self-esteem is it's very wonky, right? You can feel good about yourself, and then maybe somebody says something to you. You do a little social comparison. You go online. You see, my God, they're living a better life than me. They have less wrinkles than me, right? They're doing better than I am. And all of a sudden, your self-esteem plummets. It's not very stable. Self-compassion is very stable. The research shows that it keeps building and growing. And what's super exciting about it is that it lowers depression, anxiety, and stress. And it improves, you know, optimism, well-being, your overall health. So it kind of works both ends of the spectrum. I like to think about it as both a parachute and a life vest. So it is a parachute when you're like, you know, I know that I've been to Costa Rica recently myself, just bought a house there. This like, oh my God, I'm going to a foreign country. I don't speak the language. How am I going to do this? How am I going to navigate this? What could go wrong? But it's a parachute because, you know what? If I fail, if I have a mishap, I've got this built-in kind of coach 24/7. I've got myself to support myself. And it's a life vest. When you have a misfortune, when you know, maybe you have a health crisis or you're struggling at work, struggling in a relationship, you can turn to yourself like a good friend and ask, what is it that I need right now? So it's incredibly powerful. And again, it's something that absolutely anybody can learn. And when I was doing my 7 steps to rock your midlife, you can start with any of the 7, but self-compassion was the thing that transformed everything for me. Because when you start to treat yourself like a good friend, you start to fall in love with yourself. Everyone's like, I love myself. How do you do it? Well, self-compassion is kind of like again, that gym, how you build this self-compassion muscle, these self-love muscles. When you love yourself, you stop doing those things that insult your soul and you start to attract what is truly in your best interest. So I love it because it's actually something that you can do every single day.
So I want that. I want what you just described because, you know, I mean, as much as I study and, you know, all that I've learned, I have to be honest with you, Ellen. There are times that I get into that, oh, woe is me, oh, poor me, you know, why are things going that way? And, you know, I'm a very lucky, fortunate person. And then here comes the beating up part, right? Like, you have nothing to feel bad about. Stop it. Don't feel bad. How do I turn that around to be self-compassionate?
Well, it's really helpful to do a little exercise. And self-compassion is essentially treating yourself like a good friend. Take a moment. And if you're listening, you could do this at home. Take a moment. And I want you to think about a dear friend, not a family member, but a dear friend, someone you really care about. And so she has had a misfortune, a mishap. Maybe she has, you know, felt embarrassed about something. Something's gone wrong in her life. Take a moment and think about, what do I do? What do I say? What's my posture? What's my tone of voice? How do I treat her? Take a moment to think about that. Now, I want you to think about yourself. And Wendy gave a perfect example. Imagine that, you know, you have had a misfortune, you have felt embarrassed, inadequate, you failed in some way. And think about, how do you talk to yourself? How do you treat yourself? What do you say? What do you do? What's your tone of voice? What's your posture? And then just write down, compare your how you treat yourself with how you treat a good friend. And what you want to start doing is thinking, gosh, if I had a good friend that was going through that, if I had a good friend who just had a fight with their spouse or their boss or their kid, or I had a good friend who just had a health issue that they're struggling with, what would I say or do for her? And then do that for yourself. It really does work to start to think about that, or think about, if I had a wise friend, how would she treat me? So that's really...
It's matter. I'm hearing you.
Okay. I lost your... that's really how you treat yourself the way you would a good friend is first. Like this right now, we'll say this is a perfect example. I have, for some reason, lost you your visual. So instead of beating myself up, I am taking a deep breath and asking myself, what is it that I need right now?
And do you need my encouragement?
Yeah. Yes. All right. So.
Yes. I hear you fine.
There we go.
There you are.
So I'm back online. But that's, you know, it's funny how the universe does this, and Mercury is no longer retrograde. But, you know, I could beat myself up and say, why is this happening? Oh my God, what did I do wrong? Or I could just say, right now, I just need a deep breath. I need to think about what would I say to a friend? And here I am back seeing your beautiful face. So it's interesting. And I think it's also really helpful to consider the three elements of self-compassion. And they really are kindness rather than judgment. So with self-compassion, you treat yourself like a friend. There's a component of being active. You are actively being kind to yourself. There is this common humanity. When you have a mishap, misfortune, you're suffering, instead of saying, oh my God, why is this happening? Oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? Or how do I fix this? You take a moment, you realize, you know what? This is normal, right? We are all imperfect beings and things go wrong. You know, when the Buddha looked over the fence and he saw that people were suffering, it was like, oh my gosh, suffering is part of life and you don't feel so isolated and alone. And finally, there's the third element of mindfulness where you are mindful, you're aware. When you are stressed, when you are suffering, you ask yourself, what is it that I need right now? And I think that's where you make that self-care, that connection where we say, okay, what do I need right now? Maybe I need a nap. Maybe I need a walk. I need to talk to a good friend. I need to get a coach or a therapist. I need to do some journaling. I need to take a hot bath or do absolutely nothing. So we give ourselves what we need. And the cool thing is you can actually do formal and informal practices. So there are meditations where you can build these self-compassion muscles. And then you can also do informal exercises where you start to treat yourself the way you would a good friend.
So I really like that, the self-compassion muscle idea, because that's where it's telling me that, you know, no matter what, I'm never going to be perfect, and that I can still, if I get into one of those beat myself up mindsets, like some of our commenters are saying, change the self-talk. You know, I think, Ellen, one of the things that for me, when a friend is feeling that, you know, what I want to do is go in and hug them first and just be there with them and listen. And so I have to learn to hug myself, I guess, and be like, okay, it's okay.
Yeah, I love that you said that, though, because one of the informal practices that you can do is actually called soothing touch. So when we touch ourselves, we generate, or when we get a hug, the reason it feels so good is that we generate this mammalian chemical of care and connection called oxytocin. And so our body doesn't know the difference between when we're touching ourselves or when someone is giving us a hug. And so we can find where on the body it is soothing. So you can sort of like put one hand on your cheek and stroke your cheek, another hand. You can give yourself a little bit of a hug. If you're in a meeting, you can give yourself kind of a surreptitious hug where no one is noticing, stroking your arms, maybe a hand on your heart, hand on your belly. And so yes, your hair, right? Or even I love rubbing your hands together. And when we do this with this mindful awareness and this presence, it actually helps us savor more of the good. And the cool thing is that you've probably had guests on before who've said neurons that fire together wire together. So the more we practice the self-compassion, the more we change the structure of our brains, and eventually it becomes kind of automatic that that self-critical voice really takes a back seat. It may pop up a little bit here or there, and you learn how to say, thank you very much, I hear you, but let's give you another job to do. And I really want to amplify this voice of self-compassion, this voice that says, I love you and I'm here for you. What do you need? I don't want you to suffer. And let that self-critic go a little bit. And over time, it just gets easier and easier as we literally start to change the structure of our brains.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we talked about was caregivers. You know, so many of us at this age find ourselves, and sometimes in the sandwich generation, right? We're still caregiving for our kids, and then we're caregiving for our parents, and then like, who's caregiving for us? What kind of suggestions do you have on that kind of information, you know, those kind of situations?
Well, self-compassion can be very, very helpful. You know, we often think about, you know, I will, you know, go to a seminar on how to deal with this, get some support. But the cool thing about self-compassion is you can give it to yourself in the moment when you are struggling. So let's say you were, you know, dealing with, you know, an aunt, a parent, a sibling, and they are really stressed and struggling. You start to feel, oh my God, I'm feeling this in my body. Like I am feeling these difficult emotions, especially if you're very empathetic. You're very compassionate. You start to feel these things in your body. And so in that moment when you're feeling it, rather than just getting everything drained out of you, you can offer yourself compassion. So if, you know, if you're with them, you can, again, do that surreptitious hug and just say to yourself, take a little self-compassion break, either take an actual break or in the moment, say to yourself, you know, this is a moment of suffering. I am suffering. Saying that to yourself, okay, I am struggling, noticing. So it's that mindfulness piece. I am noticing as I talk to my mom or my sister and I hear all of these stories and I want to tell her or him what to do and they don't ever listen to me, but it really, you know, makes it very difficult for me. Okay, I'm mindful that I'm stressed and struggling right now and asking, what do I need right now? Maybe I just need to put my hand on my head. Maybe I need to do a little bit of breathing. As I'm listening, I need to do a little bit of breathing. And what the deep breathing does, especially if you are exhaling longer than the inhalation, what that's doing is it's pairing up what's called your parasympathetic, your rest and digest nervous system, helping you to stay relaxed. Maybe need a little, takes a little sip of water. If it's face-to-face, maybe I need to say, you know, Mama, I need to use the bathroom right now. I need to take a little break. And you're in there and you just do this little self-compassion break and just saying to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. That's mindfulness. Suffering is part of life. That is that common humanity. This is normal, right? I'm not the first person to have to really be a caregiver for someone that I love. And then bringing in that kindness, may I be there for myself in this moment? May I give myself what I need? And maybe that's just, may I be safe? May I be happy? May I be healthy? May I be at ease? So you turn to yourself the way you would a good friend, but you do it in that moment. And that's why it's so powerful, because you're there for yourself, offering yourself compassion. Compassion means to suffer with. So you're offering yourself compassion while you're in that caregiving moment. And it's really powerful. Another thing that's powerful to do too is to know the difference between empathy and compassion. Do you know the difference, Wendy, between
no,
empathy and compassion?
Tell me the difference.
Yeah, so empathy means I'm feeling what you're feeling, right? So, right. Oh my God, I'm feeling so sad. I'm feeling so depressed. I'm feeling so heavy, right? With compassion, there's a little bit more of like, okay, I'm putting my arm here. Like you think about like a lifeguard. When a lifeguard goes in to save somebody, they're not going to reach their hand out. They usually reach out, you know, a buoy or something. Right, so here I am. I'm here for you, but I'm not connecting so deeply. So I'm feeling what you're feeling. I understand. I understand you're suffering and I'm here for you. I'm suffering with you, but I'm not in the deep. I'm not in the deep end. I'm not drowning with you. And it's much more powerful, and you don't lose yourself in the process of caregiving. And then you also know, as getting back to that self-care piece, what do I need to be my best? You know, knowing that I can't give from an empty cup. I think one of the things that keeps boomers from the self-care piece is often when we give ourselves self-care, we start to feel guilty. Because subconsciously we believe and we've been taught especially as women, that we have to put everyone and everything else first. So after we've taken care of like mom and sis and our kids and our job and the house and our spouse and the dog, there's no energy left for you. Conversely, right. You say, you know what? I'm putting myself first. So yeah, as we said earlier, you know, I'm recovering from the surgery. Before I came on today, I did a little lie down. I got on Plum Village. I did a little 15-minute, you know, rest and restore, because that's what I needed to be my best, to fill my cup so that I can give, which I love to do. So it's so important. Guilt is only a productive emotion if it gets you to change your behavior. And in the instance where you're just giving, giving, giving to everybody else, but not yourself, the guilt is not productive. So just understand that, let it go, practice self-compassion, and give yourself the self-care that you need.
So I have to, you've used the word suffer. And when I was being trained as a coach, one of the sayings that they taught us was that pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. How do you put that into perspective in what you're talking about when you say, well, you're going to suffer, you do suffer, and so now it's time to be self-compassionate? Is that a contradiction? Like, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional?
Yeah. It's not a contradiction. The way that I read that really is that so much of the suffering happens in the mind. So when we think, oh my gosh, like when I was feeling really awful after my operation, to be really careful, my mind wanted to weave all of these stories. That's where the suffering comes in, the stories that we weave that make it worse. So, you know, I was telling myself, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to get to go to London. I'm not going to feel better. I started, you know, and I had to really practice my meditation, you know, being mindful, understanding these old stories. And what that really means, it's kind of like what the Buddha says, is that, you know, you get hit with an arrow, and instead of pulling the arrow out and healing yourself, you're like, you know, throw the extra hour, which is this mindset of, why is this happening to me? What did I do wrong? You know, this shouldn't be happening. All of these stories that we tell ourselves. And so I think, I've really come to realize, and I think that's one of the things that happens to us as we age, we get a lot wiser, start to see that the biggest suffering is the suffering in our minds, the stories that we tell ourselves, the old patterns that we get back into. And so, yes, there's going to be pain. But the research really shows when you practice self-compassion, you give yourself what you need, it helps to manage the pain versus when you go into this, oh, woe is me, nobody's suffering and struggling like me. It actually makes the suffering much, much worse, and it interferes with the healing that can happen.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I have a couple of interesting comments here. Jana says one of the simplest techniques she's ever learned for shifting her feelings is to smile. Smile makes her feel happy. So I love that. And then David says singing always makes him feel better. So those are two other self-compassion techniques. Would you agree?
Yeah. Well, what I recommend people do is grab a piece of paper and make five columns: body, mind, heart, spirit, and relationships, and write out those things that help you to feel really good. As you know, Dave was saying, singing and smiling. And for me, I love to dance and move my body and spend time in nature and take long baths and spend time with my partner and cooking and all of these things. And so then when you are struggling and suffering, you take out the piece of paper, you look at the list, and you think, what can I do right now? I could just listen to music. I could read a book. I could call a friend. I could go for a walk. I could smile. I could sing. And so you make this list, and that becomes kind of a roadmap of things that you can do. And that's really, it's very unique and individual in terms of what's going to help you to feel better. And I love those techniques. Something else I love to do to feel better is just to change your posture. So just to, when you notice that you are, you know, feeling scared and you're struggling and you're stressed, you just stand up, you smile, and you say, yes.
Right.
You know, yeah, before you have a power talk. Yeah, absolutely. And also learning how to transmute fear. So, you know, self-compassion is emotional regulatory technique. You learn how to work productively with your difficult emotions. So with fear, you name it, you tame it. When you're feeling afraid, maybe you're, you know, looking to step outside your comfort, you're going to Costa Rica, you're stepping outside your comfort zone. You're like, okay, this is just fear. And what happens is you take the fear from the primitive part of your brain, your amygdala, and you bring it to your big mammalian frontal cortex and it kind of unsticks it. And then you name it, you tame it, you feel it in your body. Emotions are felt experiences in the body. If you do some yoga poses, you can kind of run that fear through your body. And then, yes, do that thing where you stand up and you say, yes, you're in the airport. Like, yes, you can transmute that fear into excitement. And I think that's something that's so important, you know, as baby boomers, right? That we want to have excitement. We want to do fun, cool things in our lives. Excitement and fear are very similar physiologically. We sweat, our heart beats faster, our pupils dilate. And you can say, you know, I'm really excited about going to Costa Rica. And you can actually transmute that, or if you're, you know, you're going to do some public speaking or you have a conversation, you think about, I'm excited about doing these things, not of being afraid. And there's so much that we can do working productively with our emotions that in our culture, we're really taught to deep six them. And so what you want to do is, you know, you want to give them some breathing room. What am I feeling right now? And what can I do to help myself to move through this? And the cool thing that happens is as you feel more of the difficult emotions, the grief, the sadness, and we've all, you know, as we're boomers, we're losing people. It's really, it's hard. But as you grieve, as you give yourself what you need, as you deal with your frustration, what happens is that the joy, the happiness, the curiosity, all of these other beautiful emotions that we learn about in positive psychology start to grow and multiply as well.
Josephine says laughter yoga works too.
Yep.
You said make five columns, body, mind. What were the columns and why five instead of just one column of things I can do to make myself feel better?
Well, you could do one if you like. I like to do five because I think it's helpful to think about categories. So with your body, you can think about, you know, I could get a massage. I could go for a walk. I could do some yoga. My mind, I could meditate. I could journal. I could see a coach. My emotions, you know, I could listen to some music that makes me feel good. I could use some essential oils. My spirit, you know, I could join a spiritual community that makes me feel good. I could do some prayer or read some, you know, some books that really helped me to lift my spirit. And then my relationships. Who are the people in my life that I can turn to? You know, those besties that I have, the family members that I can turn to. So I just find it's helpful for people to kind of tease out all of the various ways that they can and want to care for themselves.
Yeah, thank you. I will put those five columns in the show notes because I didn't catch them at first when you said it. So tell me what inspired you to start learning about self-compassion. I mean, you were already a very accomplished person before you went down this path.
Yeah, well, I was looking for an intervention. Again, I was a personal fitness trainer. I was super hard on myself. And I was actually looking at all of these women's magazines, you know, the ones they sell at the checkout counter that say, you know, lose 25 pounds in 3 minutes by eating chocolate, right? And
yes,
I was
please.
Like, that have, right? And then they've got these recipes for these, you know, sticky ribs and cakes and things with a million calories. And it's a dietitian. Just rub me the wrong way. All of these BS magic bullet solutions that absolutely don't work. And my dissertation chair, Karen, was like, you should do meditation. And I was like, wait a minute, I didn't go back to school to become a meditation teacher. but I decided to take her up on her suggestion. And I started Googling and I found Chris Germer, who is a partner with Kristen Neff in terms of the leaders in this field of self-compassion. And Kristen Neff agreed to be on my dissertation committee and help me with my research if I learned self-compassion myself. So I saw how effective it was in my own life. And again, published my research. My findings were, you know, really, really profound in terms of the impact that it has on body image. And so I haven't stopped doing it since. And I really, you know, I think it gave me the courage to follow my heart and leave a marriage that wasn't working for me. Again, it's a resource that I turn to all the time. Certainly is one of my top three core values, along with wellness and spirituality, that really has helped me over the last year or so get through breast cancer and, you know, surgery to have my ovaries out and all of these, you know, issues that really brought me to my knees, that I had to grow faith over fear. Because, you know, getting a cancer diagnosis is an incredibly scary thing. You have to make a lot of decisions. And knowing that at any moment in time, I could just do nothing and think about, what do I need right now? And sometimes that was just like, I just need to take a nap. You know, I just need to call a good friend. I just need to cry. I need to talk to my mom, who is really, really compassionate and helpful. So it's really served me well over the last decade or so since I've learned it.
And that sounds like that was a big learning for you to give yourself permission to ask for what you needed, to give yourself what you needed. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's awesome. Been great in my work too. Most of the women who come to me are dealing with weight gain, because that's something, you know, as women are going through menopause, you know, generally people put on weight, they don't know what to do. And we don't start with a lifestyle change. What we do is we start with the self-compassion, learning to treat yourself like a good friend and doing the lifestyle change because you love yourself. And it's a real game changer, as opposed to the way we usually go about it is, oh my God, I hate myself. I'm disgusted with my body. How did I let myself get to this place? That doesn't work, because what self-criticism does is when you criticize yourself, you generate cortisol, which is the hormone of fight and flight. And what that does is it ramps up appetite and it shuts you down. It actually shuts down motivation. It increases fat deposition around your middle. It does exactly what you don't want to do. Conversely, when you give yourself self-compassion, you're generating oxytocin. And a lot of times, you know, and if any emotional eaters out there, a lot of times we're going to food because we want that love and connection. So instead of going for those dopamine squirts, which are, you know, dopamine is all about the chemical reward, we can generate this oxytocin by being kind to ourselves. Another great thing to do, anybody who has a fur baby, any pet moms and dads out there, spending time with our pets, even looking at our pets, actually raises oxytocin. So that's a beautiful thing that you can do, which is going to actually help you to feel better. It's going to keep you away from that emotional eating and going to improve your health and well-being.
Totally, totally. So tell us about the work that you're doing, your podcast, and how people would work with you.
Well, you can find me at themidlifewhisperer.com. That's themidlifewhisperer.com. And all of my work is around rocking your midlife. And I would say the majority of people coming to me are mostly baby boomers. I have a few late Gen Xers. And so we really work through these seven steps. And so I've been trained as a dietitian, as a psychologist, as a wellness coach, as a self-compassion teacher, working through first knowing yourself. That's really the foundation of your midlife transformation. Then self-compassion, which we talked a ton about. Then we work towards energizing yourself. And that's really how you take care of your boomer body. Reprogramming your brain, working on neuroplasticity, working on really up-leveling your thinking and having much more of a positive mindset. The fifth step is really empowering yourself. This is the step where you're like, okay, I'm ready to jump off that cliff or out of that plane. I've got my parachute. I'm going to do this thing that scares me to make the most of my life. And then rehab your relationships, because what happens is you become that butterfly. You're feeling really good. You're flying. But a lot of people in your life still think you're the caterpillar. And so this is where you learn how to talk to your family members, how to stand up for yourself, how to say no. And then the final step is enlighten yourself, which is really about making that spiritual connection, connecting with your soul. Because I think what happens, you know, in midlife and is where, you know, for boomers out there, we start to realize that we're running out of time and our soul is like, hello, you're here for a reason. There's things that you want to experience, that you want to do. You want to travel. You want to meet people. You want to make a difference in the world, find purpose, passion, and meaning. As you said in your opening, it's never too late to have a new dream. So I'm all about meeting people where they are. I've been a coach for over 15 years and I absolutely love coaching because, you know, the coachee knows what they need. And as coaches, we know how to ask the right questions, how to hold that vision and help them grow it. And it's just such incredibly rewarding work to work with somebody for 3 months or 6 months and then see, oh my goodness, you're there. You're rocking your midlife. Way to go. It's just so inspiring. So I just love, love, love what I do.
And is it one-on-one coaching, Ellen, or a group?
Yeah, I have one-on-one coaching. I'm glad you asked. And I also have a Rock Your Midlife group, and we meet twice a month, and that you get group coaching. And then we meet once a month and we have a group meeting where I do a little bit of teaching. And I also have a free workshop. If you're listening live, it is happening tomorrow night at, Wednesday night, the 17th at 5 p.m. at Rock Your Midlife. We'll be going through the steps, an actual workshop. We're going to be rolling up our sleeves. So if you're interested in my work and you want to work on rocking your midlife, you can check that out. And you can find that on Eventbrite, or you can also go on Instagram, and it's in my bio. I'm the Midlife Whisperer.
Okay. So you'd find it on the Midlife Whisperer on Instagram. And your show, you have your Rock Your Midlife show.
Yes, you were on, which was super
fun. I was on.
We had a great time talking about happiness and rocking your midlife. So I do that show live on Wednesdays. It's Rock Your Midlife. And you can just go to your favorite podcast platform and check that out as well.
Yes. And it is fun. I mean, you can tell Ellen has a lot of energy and a lot of knowledge to share and a lot of compassion to share with her guests. So I would definitely encourage you to check it out. It's Rock Your Midlife. And so that workshop sounds great on Wednesday. I'm doing Sages and Seekers, so I won't be able to do that Wednesday, but maybe the next one.
Yeah, and it's recorded. So if you want to check it out, you can sign up and catch the replay.
Okay, awesome. So I always ask my guests for one or two takeaways, things that we can do to create self-compassion as our superpower. What would you tell me?
I would say, again, treat yourself the way that you would a good friend. And yeah, fire your self-critic. You know, the self-critic is really, we develop our self-critic when we are young. It's there to protect us from, you know, to make sure that we do what we're supposed to do so that we are loved and taken care of. But give that self-critic a little bit of a voice and then let it go, because self-love is so much, and self-compassion is so much more powerful.
Oh, so much more powerful. That's awesome. Well, thank you, Ellen. What did I not ask you that I should have asked you?
We should talk about Costa Rica, my friend. Costa Rica, Pura Vida. Like, what's the best thing about Costa Rica?
Tell me.
Tell you. Well, I'll just say, yeah, I went to Costa Rica January 25th. Closed on a house March 14th. So that's how much I love Costa Rica. And really, I'm here to say, do that thing that scared you. I was talking about being scared to go to Costa Rica when I was in the real estate agent's office and I'm signing the papers. I am like shaking like a leaf. My intellect is going, this is insane. Who goes to a country for the first time, buys a house? But my intuition and all of that self-compassion, I walked into this house, my fiance and I, Kenny, looked at each other and we said, This is our next chapter, right? We could see our grandkids there and growing old there and retirement. And it's just the best country. The people are absolutely gorgeous. All you need to know how to say is hola, pura vida. The people love people traveling. It is beautiful. The food is, the traditional is like, you know, beans and rice, and it's yummy. The seafood is out of this world. The roads aren't that bad. And the nature is amazing. The people of Costa Rica, 25% of the land is preserved for nature, and they love nature and they love people. I mean, they really live by the golden rule: do no harm to nature, do no harm to each other. It's just a beautiful, magnificent country. So you're going to have such a good time. And I encourage all of you listening, go to Costa Rica with Rhodes Scholar. What an amazing thing to do.
I know y'all, yeah, some of them are coming with me. Some of the listeners are coming with me. So I'm very excited about that. Thank you. We've had some wonderful comments. Doris says her takeaway is fire that self-critic. And Jana has been going through some caregiving with her husband who just had knee replacement surgery, but he's doing better. So she is practicing self-compassion. Good for you, Jana. Josephine was dancing this morning. So
awesome.
We have a great audience, Dr. Ellen. I'm so glad you joined us today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let me just remind you all, certainly about Dr. Ellen's workshop on Wednesday. And you said you can find that on the Midlife Whisperer on Instagram.
I'll give you the link.
Okay.
So you put it in the show notes.
Okay. So her website is themidlifewhisperer.com. You can email her at ellen@dralenalbertson.com. And then, as we said, her podcast is called Rock Your Midlife. And although this link says on Podbean, you can find it on any of the podcast players. Let me remind you about our Boomer Banter tomorrow night. If you want to come and do a taste test, have a little dessert and wine with us and talk about lifelong learning, email me at wendy@heyboomer.biz and I will send you the link for that. And yes, plan your next Rhodes Scholar trip at rhodesscholar.org/heyboomer. So next week, I am doing a solo show. I'm going to talk about the idea of never too old. And then the following week is Memorial Day. And then June 5th, which is the following Monday, I will be in Costa Rica. So I'm going to see about maybe doing some little snippets of recordings while I'm down there that I can share with all of you. But there will not be a Monday show on Memorial Day or the Monday after that. But I have this great catalog of shows, so feel free to go back and catch up and share with your friends so that they can find out about Hey Boomer and what we're doing in this community. And I like to leave you with the belief that we can all live with curiosity, live with passion, and live with courage. And remember that you are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. My name is Wendy Green with Dr. Ellen. Thank you. And this has been Hey Boomer. Hey Boomers, 40% of Americans have a hard time swallowing pills. So when it's time to take your vitamins, large capsules and pills are out of the question. I certainly don't like those. So we know gummy vitamins exist, but they're full of sugar. They get stuck in your teeth, and they only contain a fraction of the nutrients that you need. Luckily, Easy Melts has discovered the ultimate vitamin sweet spot. Vitamins that melt in your mouth, taste like a treat, and are packed with nutrients ready for absorption, all without an ounce of sugar. For a limited time, Easy Melts is giving Hey Boomer listeners a free 3-month supply of vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelts.com/heyboomer. Say goodbye to the old way of taking your vitamins and hello to the easy way.